Okay, thank you all for joining us. I'm Rebecca Bryant from the Hellenic Observatory, and I will be Rose Chair today. And we're very happy to welcome Professor Apostolos Papadopoulos from Harakopio University in Athens, who's actually a visiting research fellow at the Regents Center for Transnational Studies at Regents University for a couple of months, I suppose. Yes. Professor Papadopoulos is a graduate of the LSE, the sociology department, where he received a master's degree, and is a geographer who has a PhD from the University of Sussex. And he, since the end of the 1990s, has conducted quite a bit of research on rural immigration, migration flows, migrant immigration, and the labor market in Greece and Southeast Europe. And he's recently finished a research project on the dynamics and opportunities for the immigration of African immigrants in Greece. And he has been a member of the working group on migration attached to the Greek prime ministry. And today he'll be talking about, I believe, the project that he had been working on, project that he's recently been working on, and the title of the talk is From Migration Crisis to Refugee Crisis in Europe, Securitization Priorities versus Integration Policies.
Thank you.
40 minutes.
Yes, that's okay. More than enough. Thank you for the invitation and for inviting me and allowing me to present my work in the Hellenic Observatory. I've changed a little bit the title. It's securitization priorities versus what? It's just to make a point on whether there are integration policies. I will not say very many new things, but I try to put a context on the discussion on migration crisis and refugee crisis. Do you hear me? Well, okay. I will first put a context on that, a theoretical context, and then I will try to present the public discussion on migration refugee crisis and make some comments on that, and then focus on the Greek case. And at the end, I will try and draw some conclusions on the further research. So I will start with the issue of whether we live in an age of migration, which is a very classic term called age of migration, castles. And castles simply saying that, and restating most of the time, this basic idea that also in the early 21st century there are forces which generate international migration, and they are more powerful than ever. And human mobility has been a key facet of global integration. But the public concern on migration is high, and it remains powerful. And in recent years, the other thing is that in recent years, governments, against research findings, and we should say that straight from the beginning, against research findings, insist that migration is a security threat. And this is becoming more and more prominent because of the attacks. And I just mentioned there are some attacks in the past. The New York terrorist attacks of September 11th, this event changed everything in migration policies, not only in the United States, but also in Europe. But also we had attacks in Madrid, in London, and the recent attacks, the killings in Paris. These, of course, they are major blows in the public sphere, but also they have significant repercussions on the migration question in Europe. Not directly, but indirectly. We have a dominant approach of securitization of migration, which is supported by the new EU policies. And this is based on the perspective of ensuring the security of rich northern states and their populations against the threat coming from the populations originating from Asia, Africa, from everywhere outside Europe. I should say that migration policies, on top of that, exacerbate human insecurity because they don't leave too much space for legal migration. So the migration policies become more and more strict and the more and more disfavoring legal migration, apart from high-skilled migration. That's the one they increase. The drivers of international migration are many. They just there's a list of drivers. I haven't put them in hierarchical order. Just mention them, and you pick up the ones that you are mostly interested. But I would say that I've put on the top the neoliberal globalization and social transformation, which is a key driver, which changed a lot in many states. And the issue of inequality and also of conflict, all of them are can be synthesized, and also there are issues, there are drivers which can be mentioned, like the social dynamics of migration and the role of the migration industry, which is important, the networking of migrants. But this is not the major thing. The major thing, in my opinion, is the neoliberal globalization, the inequalities, and the conflicts. So there is a wide impression that we live in an age of migration, and this has been recently challenged, not only by Russell King, but other colleagues, that when we speak about migration, we do refer to a large proportion of the population at the world level or to a small proportion. And the numbers show that we have only a small proportion of the world population that is moving. This is more than 3% of the world population. This is the UN data. So the people who move are much less than the people who don't move, and there are people focusing, the researchers focusing on the issue of why don't people move instead of researching why people move. So it's a change of perspective. Second challenge is on the ground that the vast majority of population is not free to migrate. So there are specific there are limitations for people to move, although there are, due to conflicts and to insecurity, there are people who are living in large numbers because they feel that they are not safe in the places that they were born, and the examples of Syria, Afghanistan, and other countries are very telling. The third challenge is that we speak about, we have in mind that international migration is a small proportion of population movements. We should also take into account that there are other kinds of movements apart from international migration. We have short-term movements, we have internal migration, and these issues, if they are measured and put together with international migration, we will see that internal migration and short movements involve much larger number of population than international migration. I would say that we are in position to speak about a paradigm shift, and turn away from the simple fact than stating that we live in an age of migration, and we focus on more specific on issues like mobility, and substitute to some extent the word of migration by the word mobility, which mobility is a more captures in a much better way the complexity of movements without implying that we care more about international migrants. So we have a continuum of movements starting from internal migration to international migration. There are increasing number of scholars who stress that there is a continuity between internal and international migration. And we speak also about cultures of migration. There are colleagues speak about the cultures of migration. And when speaking about cultures of migration, we imply that the abilities, limits, and needs of the movers, as well as the cultural tradition and social practices that frame those abilities and limitations through time. So we focus on migrants and on their movements. And other scholars also add to this discussion that human movements are actually transnational processes which cannot be contained within the various national contexts and either on sending or receiving countries, but and they should be treated as global processes. While if they are contained within nation states, they become instruments of state legitimacy. They are counted as forces in favor of against state security. So we need something. We need a paradigm shift, a different way of approaching migrants. So what now? Turn my discussion to the European migrant refugee crisis. This is a kind of a recent jargon. It's being used since many years ago from migration scholars, but the public opinion has adopted this term, European migrant crisis and European refugee crisis, in April 2015. And the specific events which led to the wide use of these terms are the accidents involving many migrants who got drowned in the Mediterranean Sea and became very prominent in the media across the world. So we have three different media news agencies: BBC, the Washington Post, and Al Jazeera. The BBC and Washington Post opted for the term migrant crisis to depict the flows of people to Europe, whereas Al Jazeera chose the term refugee crisis. So both terms, every term used, words matter in the migration debate, and of course we cannot use the two terms interchangeably. Each term means different, implies different things, different processes. But on the one side, there were those international organizations and a part of the media saying that the term migrant is used as a generic term that encompasses many other categories such as irregular, illegal migrants, movements of people, and so on. And that the term refugee should be left only for very specific uses and for people who apply for a protection, for a very specific regime of protection coming out of the Geneva Convention and from the state's obligations to observe the Geneva Convention. Whereas on the other side, there are people like Malone, one of the journalists who was made a lot of comments from Al Jazeera, who made interesting comments on the use of the terms. And he said that the use of the term migrant is reductive, implying that it helps creating an environment in which hate speech and thinly veiled racism can fester, while the majority of the people drowning in the Mediterranean are refugees. And the use of the word migrant gives weight only to those who want to see economic migrants, and also imply that most of those risking their lives to land on Europe's shores are doing it only for money. Like if people who move for bettering their ways of their lives are to be something which is not that, is not a very good cause to support. So according to this view, there is no migrant crisis in the Mediterranean. There is a very large number of refugees fleeing an unimaginable misery and danger, and a small number of people trying to escape, smaller people trying to escape the sort of poverty that drives some to desperation. So the argument is that the large majority of the people who move are refugees, people who need protection, not the others who are migrants, and they are simply economic migrants.
Was that backed up by any statistical research?
No, is the discussion I just tried to make it to discuss, and they are mostly articles on the press.
Yeah, but such as an assertion at this point.
No, there isn't any. I will back it up with more data later. Just after that, I will give you some data from international organizations. I'm not going to stay only on simply comment on what they say. And we have these images of people crossing the sea, of people drowned, and families, and children, a lot of children also among these people. And we shouldn't forget, before I go to the data, we shouldn't forget that on the one hand, the European migrant crisis, or the European refugee crisis, is a bit of a Eurocentric term. It narrows down the discussion on Europe, whereas similar events take place in Asia. There are everyday events also in Indonesia and in other countries. Maybe not so in so many numbers, large numbers, but there are also similar phenomena there. What is important is that what officials say. The EU is a quote from Matthias Rutte, Director General of the Directorate General for Migration and Home Affairs, who stated, maybe I think it's in June 2015, that the EU is facing an unprecedented crisis with unprecedented flows of refugees and migrants for which the current system was not designed. And turning now to the actual discussion on the flows. There are three major migrant refugee flows to Europe throughout the 2015. One is the central Mediterranean route through Italy and Malta. The second one is the eastern Mediterranean route through Greece and the Aegean. And the third, but not less important one, is the western Balkans route through Hungary. And I'm saying that because most of the people focus on the people who cross Greece and Aegean to go to Europe, whereas there are other flows who start from the Balkans and go through Hungary and other countries to Northern Europe. People from Kosovo, Albania, Serbia, and other countries. Of course, the largest flow originates from outside Europe. So we came across a lot of data and a lot of maps since June 2015, picturing a situation. I'm focusing on the arrows of people going from the outskirts of Europe towards the center of Europe, towards the northern Europe. The most important here I think is not the numbers, and the arrows, like being invaded. I'm not saying that the numbers of the people were not very significant. I will show you how significant they are. But the most important for the public is that they are being invaded, that Europe is being invaded. The numbers there are from the IOM, International Organization for Migration. also another picture by the UNHCR. These are the two more important international organizations who have data, collect data, and depict the data. And here, the most important thing to note is the daily number of people coming, crossing the border. And since they cross the border in Greece, which means Lesbos or Kos, Rhodes or Samos, the islands, then how many people cross the border with Fyrom, how many people cross the border with Serbia, how many Croatia and Slovenia. So it's more like an issue about borders. The next one with the flows are when the specific number of people cross the specific border. As if people just move instantaneously from the border of Greece with Turkey to the border with Fyrom, which was not a very simple process in most of the cases. Like people were instantly moved from one place to the other, from one border to the next. This was not an easy process, not an easy movement within each state. And we had, of course, pictures showing how people were treated by the police, by the public authorities, by the public, and whether there was infrastructure. And I will make some comments later. So, zooming now to Greece, the specific issue of migration flows through Greece. I will say that Greece in the 1990s was a country where migrants who came originated from the Balkans. But since 2010-12, most of the flows going to Greece or through Greece to Europe came from the Middle East, Asia, and a smaller number from the Balkans, and even smaller number from Africa. On the basis of apprehensions, I'm very careful in showing this data. These are from the Greek police. Okay, these are the apprehensions on the border or within the country. You will see that because the number of crossings or of apprehensions within 2015 is so large, the number of apprehensions and crossings in other years seems very too little. Okay, so it's an issue of scale. Irregular migrants are those who are apprehended in the border because they don't have the legal documents to cross the border. That's what simply means. And this is deaggregated by border area. In the past, the people who came to Greece came from Albania or from Balkans, as I said, but later on came from, since 2010 came from Asia, Middle East, and so on. The important thing is the border. The blue area within the column depicts the number of people who cross the border across the sea border. So now you have the number of the people who cross the sea border to Greece going up to 760,000 people by the end of November, which is unheard of as a number in Europe. People cross a single border of a European country. Of course, there are the important issues that there was a fence built by the Evros River in the north of Greece, just a 10-kilometer fence. When this fence finished in 2013, it just caused the movement of the flows to the sea after 2013. You see that the number in 2013 is very low, less than 50,000 people crossed the border to Greece. And now this graph shows that most of the people who go through to Greece is through the Turkish border, the sea border. 95% of people who cross the border of Greece come through Turkey. So the immigration problem becomes a problem with between Greece and Turkey, or between Greece and Turkey and Europe. I'm going to say that most of the people who crossed the border in the recent flows are people coming from Syria, but not all of them. 55-60% of them come from Syria, but there are other nationalities like people from Afghanistan, Iraq, and so on. And I'm just showing you the Lesbos case because it's a unique case. Only this island, until the end, from January to November 2015, within 11 months, it received less than 500,000 people. So it is the 56% of total crossings to Greece. So just one island. And there is a daily arrival of 2,500 or 5,000 people. And also the issue of deaths. So the public centered also on the issue of deaths. How many people crossed the border and how many people died? The number of people who died in the Aegean Sea is more than 500 people, and the deaths of people trying to cross the sea border to Italy is much larger. This doesn't say really a lot, but it is important that more than 3,500 lives have been lost because people trying to cross the border, and they are not allowed people, they are not, so the public authorities are not allowed just to let people pass by the European regulations. They should capture them and within the border. Once they have crossed the border for the country, I'm not showing you other pictures. If you want to ask, I will, because I want to get some to wear in some time. And so European migrant crisis is becoming like an emergency situation, and the number of refugees is increasing, but not in Greece, in other countries. So people want to cross Greece to file their claim for asylum in Germany. And I was looking today the numbers in 2015. Germany in 2015 has received nearly 500,000 claims for asylum. Sweden has received a large number. Austria, Netherlands, France. But this is not the asylum claims are not distributed all across the countries. So it's asylum seekers aim at specific countries. So there is a strategy behind migrants. And the EU response to the crisis. What is the EU response to the crisis? EU came with a European agenda on migration on May 2015. And the EU agenda is structured along four pillars. Just have a look on the measures or the policy measures that the EU, the European Commission, structured in order to reflect, to reply, to confront the issue of European migrant crisis. Firstly, reducing the incentives for irregular migration. This is an old agenda, not a new agenda. By addressing the root causes of irregular and forced displacement in third countries, by fighting against the smugglers and traffickers, by implementing return policies. This is a very, it's a recurrent pattern, the return policies, which always come to the discussion, but they were not implemented in large numbers up to now. It was on the basis of two countries of bilateral agreements. Secondly, border management, saving lives and securing external borders, the strengthening of Frontex, the smart border technology and surveillance, and strengthening the capacity of member states to control their borders. The third pillar has to do with a strong common asylum policy. So the EU becomes more and more conscious of the fact that there should be common rules, common context, a European context for accepting asylum seekers or accepting refugees, which is very difficult to obtain. The asylum policy is not implemented in the same way across Europe. There are very many variations. And fourthly, a new policy on legal migration. And this is the smallest proportion, the smallest number of policies, and the smallest, I would say, effort is given on that. So a migration policy agenda becomes a complex issue of issues cross-cutting internal and external affairs, as well as citizenship, mobility, and border management provisions. So it's we have a mega policy expanding to all issues, starting from asylum, going to border management, and touching also on legal migration. So a migration policy becomes a mega policy for EU. And we come to the issue of mixed migration flows. This is a term that you will not see very often in the literature. You will see it as a technical term, not as a scientific term. This term depicts the complexity of migration dynamics and of the challenges they pose for migration policy. So it's a technical term which is was introduced into the discussion 2010-2011, and then it was taken out of the discussion. So it's actually it's a very descriptive term used by the international organizations such as UNHCR, meaning that we have mixed migration, meaning that we have people who want to move voluntarily and people who don't move voluntarily, or who move because the cause was that they were forced. There was some force that made them move. And there is a tension between sorting of migrants into policy categories, and there are mixed motivations for moving. Sorry. So, migrant refugee flows are extremely complex and driven by a complicated mix of factors. The majority of those arriving currently to Europe have protection needs, but many others are departing not for Europe, not from their countries of origin, from Syria, for example, but from Turkey. Because they feel unsafe or they want to have a better life. So we have a mixed flows composed of three basic groups, to put it simply, people whose protection claims are likely to be recognized by European authorities, individuals fleeing from instability or violence in their home countries but may not qualify for refugee status, like some Somalis and some Syrians, and also migrants who feel compelled to leave their countries for largely economic reasons, from Western Balkans or from other sub-Saharan nationals, who is very likely that they will not get protection. They will count as economic migrants. Although all of them are in need of protection, or may apply for protection. So I would say that mixed migration flows has been used as a term on the part of policymakers to center their concern on what they see as a potential danger of abusing the asylum system. So they think that mixed migration flows, they put forward that the mixed migration flows is actually an attempt to abuse the system. And that once the system is being cleared off by the economic migrants, the asylum system will work perfectly, and then the problem will be solved. Whereas migrants actually use this option in order to get further, in order to survive, or in order to gain some protection or to gain some legal papers to secure their living, their lives in the receiving countries. So what we need, if we close the discussion, if we contain the discussion within the separate countries, we miss the issue, I think. We should, if we follow a more global perspective, we will either follow the national narrative, the national discourse, saying that many of them who cross the border are a potential or actual threat for the nation state, or consider migrants as the outcast, the people who migrate, as the expression of global processes which cannot be contained within a single nation state. And so in Europe we had, before I go to the conclusions, I will try and stress some issues in Europe. So we had what I call a domino effect in Europe. So when the migrant refugee flows advanced from southern Europe and from the southeast edge of Europe towards central and northern Europe, then more and more member states announce that they are unable to handle the flows. They are unable to manage the numbers of people that came into their country. And instead of finding ways to distribute these people, as there is one now scheme, policy, program on redistributing asylum seekers or refugees, more vague, across Europe, many of the countries constructed fences. Bulgaria and Hungary have already constructed fences or decided to raise fences in the near future, like Croatia. I don't know if Croatia has managed to finish a fence. Or even some other Balkan countries outside the European Union, like Serbia and Fyrom, have started and probably finished the fences. So we have a kind of increase the fences, increase the impediments for people to move around. And many EU member states reinstated border controls within the Schengen zone, Germany, Sweden, France, United Kingdom. And very soon it became clear that many countries didn't want to share the cost of receiving migrants, refugees, and while others do not still accept in practice the EU plan for the resettlement of refugees. The other day I read the number of people who have relocated. It's only 300 people who have been relocated from Greece and Italy to other countries. Only 300. So we would say that there is a lack of trust among the EU member states, despite that it is now more obvious than ever that for confronting migrant refugee issues, there should be a common EU approach, like the EU says. But this common approach is not introduced, it's not implemented. It's been designed, but it's not implemented. And I think there are many, many problems for its implementation. So despite that the member states sense that they are surpassed by the pressure, reality of flows, they do not accept the implementation of a common approach. And before I go to the conclusions, I will just mention what Dimitris Avramopoulos, the EU Commissioner on Home Affairs, stated just 4 days ago. He said, to alleviate the situation of the frontline member states, we adopted in record time the first European relocation and resettlement schemes. But decisions are not enough. We all agree that these schemes have not delivered the expected results. All member states have to play the game and show more solidarity. So we have lurks behind in the issue is that we have the politicization of migration. And this politicization of migration makes migration as a matter of fact a key issue in national and international politics. So it's not a national issue, it's an European issue now. And it's not a European issue like constructing a common policy. It's more like a European issue like pushing forward certain policy options, and at the same time this affects other policies. So the politicization of migration means that we have new security conceptualization that put the individuals as the reference points of security, and we have put state security as a high priority at the expense of migrant and refugee security. And the politicization of migration is illustrated, of course, in the anti-immigrant sentiments expressed in Greece, Golden Dawn, Pegida in Germany, UKIP in the UK and National Front in France, but also in governments. Certain governments or ruling coalitions have adopted this anti-immigrant stance, like Hungary, Poland, and Slovenia. And some conclusions. So migration and refugee flows are not even close to cease or decelerate in the near future, and that's quite obvious when one looks at the scientific data and the causes that send people outside their countries. So it's not an issue that is going to... Migration is not going to stop in any conceivable way. But this is not taken into account. So there are increasing concerns over the new European architecture of surveillance and at the EU border, but also of migrant refugee flows within member states. So there's a complex scheme of surveillance of the borders and of monitoring people's movements among EU member states. Which means that there is a whole attempt, a significant attempt at transferring the control outside the single member states, which is rational. But the way this is being done, through securitizing migrants and through externalizing migration policy, creates suspicions on the part of the EU sovereign member states, and because of the old politics in most of the countries, the old nationalist politics, most of the states, nearly all the states, I don't think that any of the EU states wants to hand over control over their borders to the EU. Even in Greece now, that this is quite significant to get some assistance from other countries to maintain the surveillance of the border. If this is the aim, there are problems for Greece accepting other countries helping the country, because Greece is a sovereign state. So like Greece, most of the other countries are not ready to hand over their control. And because of the current economic crisis, which is linked to the decline of the welfare state and the so-called demographic deficit, or the crisis of democracy within EU institutions, migrants and refugees are presented as abusers of the welfare system and competitors in the EU labour market. So anti-immigrant discourse remains or becomes a nation-state building process by engaging its participants in defining their loyalty to a country and by differentiating themselves from refugees and migrants. And migration scholars should work on changing the dominant discourse, in my opinion, and examine migrants and refugees not as indicators of a lack of security, but rather as subjects of security and bearers of human rights. This discussion is very easy. It's not easy to make, although international organizations push to this direction, press on this direction. It's not easy to change the discourse. And this is the last slide. So there is a politics of protection, and in my opinion, this is a criticism towards those people who believe that the politics of protection, of naming everybody refugee and respecting their human rights, is the solution to expand the human rights issue and protection to everybody in order to solve out the problem. This politics of protection is actually politics. So some people are selected to be protected, whereas the others, the member states, the sovereign states, do not recognize the protection need of those states. So only some states, so people who come from certain states are considered in need of protection. So there's a politics of who is protected. So the refugee protection regime, in my opinion, is partitioning, is a partitioning instrument, reproducing a logic which is a dichotomous logic between forced and voluntary migrants. There is not, there is to differentiate between voluntary and forced migrants is not an easy thing to do. Yet researchers have convincingly revealed that this clear-cut distinction is empirically untenable, as the motivations for movement are always mixed and above any simplistic dichotomies. And I rest with that. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Professor Papalopoulos, for a very interesting presentation. I'm sure there are many questions. I'm just going to start with one question slash comment. On one of the slides, you mentioned a need for a more global approach to migration. And at the very end, you talked about the need to get rid of this dichotomous logic of, you know, forced versus voluntary migration. But I mean, we've had a lot of calls for a more global approach to migration, right? Or even an EU-wide approach to migration, which also isn't forthcoming, really. And so I wondered if maybe you could reflect a little bit on why it's so difficult to have that more global approach, what the impediments are to... there are lots of calls for this, but it's not happening, right? I mean, if you look, for example, at even at the EU deal with Turkey, for instance, it there are certain kinds of provisions in it that are about containment mostly, mm-hmm. right? But it says nothing about the EU. I mean, the deal has no kind of broader perspective on the refugee crisis and its implications for the EU. So I wondered if maybe you could reflect on that. And I also just wanted to make the comment connected to that although certainly, one can't make clear-cut distinctions between forced and voluntary migration, right? At the same time, I think that that one of the problems may actually be that there's, on the one hand, a desire within the literature, I mean, among scholars working on this, to make a distinction because of the reasons that you gave at the beginning of your talk, right, about, you know, refugees needing immediate protection and asylum and, you know, wanting to be able to convey that to the public and things like this. Right, so on the one hand, a desire to make that distinction, or a desire to not to make that distinction, mm-hmm. right? But on the other hand, a need to be able to come up with certain kinds of policies that aren't forthcoming if one can't make the distinction. In other words, for instance, mass displacement, like you find with the Syrian crisis, mm-hmm. requires a different kind of thinking and a different kind of planning than does labor migration, let's say. I mean, mass displacement, in the sense that, at least with the kinds of displacement you're getting from Syria, if you look at the statistics from Turkey, they say that something like 90... they're expecting that at least something like 80% will not return to Syria. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to talk about integration of mass numbers of people, though. So I just wanted to raise these as some things to think about.
You want to get
to have a couple of other questions?
During your presentation, you mentioned that some of the Syrian refugees, they're not qualified for getting refugee status in European countries. So what is the main criteria for being disqualified for the status? And what's the next step for those refugees? Are they going back to Syria or what?
When we've been talking about securitization, pretty much the focus has been on CT angle, so the terrorism angle. But looking more at general security, so law and order, that sort of thing, is there a potential that there's a risk from the fact that you've got large numbers of people who've left Turkey at great expense to the West with the idea of, I want a better life for myself, I don't want to be in a tent, you know, with no job. They've moved to places like Germany where they've ended up in a tent with no job because they can't do anything other than that with millions of people sort of hitting your border. But we'll see sort of unrest in the next sort of 12 months in the same way that we've seen sort of some potential elements of that coming out with sort of Cologne, what have you. There is a sort of a street-level policing system with what are we going to do if this all goes wrong that is also incumbent upon us when we're looking at sort of millions of people crossing the borders.
Do you want to take those? It's up to you. Why don't we take one more, and then you can answer. Yeah.
Thank you. What do you think would be the effect of increasing border controls across Europe? Will it have the effect of creating some kind of refugee warehouse in Greece? My friend has reported today from Athens, where there are significant numbers of people in Europe. The 300 people you mentioned, I think, is actually 272, but that will only increase. The EU relocation scheme has deemed to have failed completely, as you were quoting from the that chap who gave the speech last Thursday. So what would be the effect of all of this?
Just to comment, it's not easy to reply and convincingly to all of those questions. I will simply say that the issue of global approach to migration is exactly the one that you described. It involves mostly bilateral agreements and multilateral ones, but the most important are the bilateral ones. And because the bilateral agreement between Greece and Turkey was not that effective, so the EU, I think in 2012, signed up a new 13. It signed a new,
readmission
agreement, which is effective to a certain extent, although it's not fully operational. This global approach to migration, which was initiated back in 2005, if I remember well, first GUM, it bears fruits to the extent that the countries outside Europe were effective to stop the flows. I mean, Tunisia, Libya, Morocco. Once many of those regimes collapsed, the problem became prominent again. And even if this was obvious in Greece, that the bilateral agreement between Greece and Libya was effective, that a lot of Africans who formerly went through the sea border to Italy came back in 2011-12 to Greece. We had, for the first time, many Africans going to Greece, making a detour, most of them. So this global approach to migration is based on those, I think, in my opinion, the most important instrument of that were the agreements and the returns, and also to hand over money to funds to those countries to, in a way, to limit those people, to increase the captures in those countries. So this global approach to migration was mostly a scheme of the European Union. Now they try to reconsider it and relaunch it. But I don't think it's very effective. And the crisis is very telling in that. They hadn't foreseen the collapse, the effects of the collapse of the Syrian regime. And they were unprepared to receive so many people. It's not that they could have contained that. It's not easy to contain this struggle. And the other option would be to have a humanitarian intervention there. That's the only alternative. Once the flow started, and most of the people who come to Greece through Turkey, people who live in Turkey, they are not the Syrians. Although certain members, certain countries like Canada and UK said that we're going to get give the refugee status to people who come straight from Syria.
To
they are recruiting from the camps.
From the camps in Jordan or... So there's a different approach. So this global approach is not effective, and it's mostly like it's more like a rhetorical instrument with no actual effect. It used to have effect when the other countries were more were stronger. What's the alternative? The alternative is not, of course, to open up the border, but to allow flows and organize the flows in a more in a better manner to respect people's needs. Again, the option of the EU is to create camps, selection camps outside Europe. So this is the next step, to create in Libya, in Turkey, in other countries, camps where they will pre-select people who, once they get the protection regime, they are under the protection regime, then they will be moved to Europe. The alternatives are not easy to come with alternatives. And I think the securitization that was mentioned, like large number of people who come to Europe and what we do with them, is that most of them will end up as wage laborers working in factories, and I'm sure that most of them will remain as economic migrants, even if they are not given their protection, and Europe needs a lot of them to work as wage laborers and maintain a low level of wages in Europe. And this is recognizable. It's not said out in the open, but it is like that. And of course, a lot of them will be returned back to their countries, which means that if they return back, there will be other issues. Then you have to make sure that when they return back, their lives are not jeopardized. And with a regime that is has fallen apart, it's not easy to make sure that even there are no issues for some of them to be, for their lives to be jeopardized, that they will be completely safe. So there is a complexity of issues behind these policies. And they are not, in a way, they are not addressed properly. What my argument is, that they are not addressed properly by policies. Policies, in most of the cases, just operate as responses for the general public. And in very limited cases, they are effective. And to say something about what kind of people qualify for a protection regime, is that there are people who are follow the screening process and try to see whether they were persecuted, whether there were there was threat against their lives, and only then they are given the protection, the status, the protection. There are areas and segments of the Syrians who may not be persecuted. Not all Syrians are persecuted. I'm sure that not coming from Syria, from Afghanistan, means that you are by all means entitled to have protection. There are screening processes. And many of those ethnic groups, because most of the nationals belong to ethnic groups, this would have been further researched, and the international organizations, most of the times, who do this, that do the background job, and public authorities should make judgment whether these are to be handed over, given the protection. So I don't remember the last question exactly. You mentioned the guy who, the person who made this, gave this statement was the Avramopoulos, is a commissioner, the EU commissioner.
Yes, so if the relocation program
yes.
is judged to have failed, and
yeah.
by the numbers up to this point, it
yeah.
doesn't look that positive, what then becomes of the refugees who have made it as far as Greece, and particularly Athens, where there are thousands literally in limbo waiting for relocation to Finland or wherever it may be?
It is not clear in this program, at least I didn't understand, how this relocation will take place. They should first be given status and then be relocated. But there is an issue in countries like, as far as I know, Denmark. People are, once they're given the status, they are relocated within the country, but many don't want to go to the rural areas, to the more remote areas. This doesn't mean that most of the people will accept this relocation. But there are not many details on how this will be done. I'm sure that this process to be implemented will take many months, not to say years. So this is a kind of, that's why I said before that there's a rhetorical to say that we will implement a relocation program, because to judge by the Greek bureaucratic capacity standards, it's not easy to make judgments in a short time, in a short period of time, and have decisions and relocate people. Only in very obvious cases this can be done. The people will, as you described, will stay in limbo around and try to find ways, as in the past, to go out of the country. And this becomes even more and more difficult to happen, because all countries now, most of the countries now, even in the Balkans, are more careful of who they let to pass the border. So there are screening places along the border. So they transfer. The issue seems to be transferred to the outskirts of Europe. So these, I'm very careful by saying that Greece is becoming like not a repository. Now, this is a very hard word. It becomes more like a container of people to be screened before they move further in Italy. But Italy is a larger country, can the capacities far higher to accept a larger number, but not that many go through Italy, although they have issues as well. So the most critical problem is for Greece right now to face the many issues attached to how refugees. Could be refugees and migrants together should be treated, because there are reports that many of them demand to be let go, to cross the border.
Yeah, there's a lot of waving through. They
yeah.
can't all be registered, the numbers
don't and they are stopped
yeah.
by the border. So this becomes more and more critical. The situation becomes more and more critical. And there is no. It's like trying to contain migrants and refugees within a small country, and at the same time letting the country decide what to do. There are not many options.
Thank you for the interesting presentation. I have three very specific questions. First, what changed in 2015 and we witnessed what we witnessed? The war in Syria has been going on for a few years now. The war in Afghanistan has been going on for 15 years now. So what changed in 2015 that we saw this magnitude of movement towards Greece in a specific corridor and so on and so forth? A second related question is, I just to make it clear. I've been reading that the majority of Syrians who come to Europe are not the ones who are in the camps. People who are in the camps have been living there for 2 or 3 years now, and they're pretty much settled there, whatever that means, obviously. But I don't mean in a nice way. But anyway, people are settled there somehow. Most people who come to Europe are actually people who just made the move straight from Syria. Is this true, and what are the policy implications for that? And then the third one is I would like to hear your opinion on how Germany specifically has dealt with the problem, and how do you evaluate Germany's role in this crisis?
Do you want to answer those and then take more questions?
Well, let's take one more to
okay.
Questions.
Thank you very much for a very interesting presentation. I have actually a small comment, but that question is interesting because I've been working on the Syrian refugee crisis, or the, if you take the common description. The governance, or global governance, is the key problem. And it is, I think, I don't know, let me know how you feel about it. It is similar to kind of like when the United Nations was created, because the need is clearly there. We need a global governance. But every time we need global governance over something, we end up, we want something like democratic global governance, but we end up more of an oligarchic style. So it never works because everybody has different interests and it never matches. So now we have this wonderful, example where you are having a country which is just outside EU and waiting at the door for like 50 years with 3 million or more refugees, and you want to contain something there. And I think the question is worrying everybody more or less in the last 6 months or so. My feeling, I don't have any evidence for that, but I wish a PhD student or an army of them will go and interview those Syrians who arrived in Germany or wherever else and figure that out, because you mentioned the 2013 agreement with Turkey and EU, the readmission agreement. I think that is the answer, because readmission agreement has a clause, very clear clause. It says it will be implemented after 3 years. That is exactly January 2016. And suddenly, in the last 6 months of 2015, we have seen that huge influx of people desperately fleeing Turkey. Because when the readmission agreement kicks in, it means anybody who is apprehended within EU countries and believed to be coming through Turkey and irregular or illegal or unauthorized, they will be sent back to Turkey. So if you arrive in the EU before the kickoff date, you are okay. If not, then you will be sent back to those camps or not so camps. I don't know. This is very speculative, but there is that clause, and this is what we have seen in the last 6 months.
Also, Frontex made the Western route much more difficult.
Mm.
So it pushed a lot of people into the Eastern route as well, apart from the Syrians.
Syrians are always
there.
There's one question by the lady.
It doesn't surprise me, and I suppose it doesn't surprise anybody, that this is a hot political issue, both nationally and regionally. My question is, and therefore the human rights issue is taking second place, if at all, but do we know, has there been done any research to understand how the humanitarian NGOs are coping, who are supposed to be there to on the principles of the human right of the refugees. Under these circumstances, I wonder, how do they function? How do they fit in this highly political affair that is troubling the whole region and the world? How is the humanitarianism and the institutions that are supposed to serve it are surviving in a specific crisis?
Do you want to take this round.
Okay. Okay. I think one reply to the question why this took place in 2015 is given by Ibrahim Sirkezi. But one could think also of the internal. I would look also at the internal at the EU policy as a whole, and the rhetoric of the member states. So Germany has a leading role in policies, not only migration policy. And Germany's view is that not only now, in recent years, to attract skilled migrant labor, and it has done so. In fact, with the southern European countries, it has attracted a large number of skilled labor. The same calls have been calls from Germany or from Angela Merkel. One could say also that, but this was favored very much by migrants, because you could see in many camps and in many documentaries that they used the rhetoric of Germany as an excuse for them to move further. So I'm not sure what the real causes are, to say the truth. Large numbers of people, of Syrians, probably were tired of waiting for a solution to be found in Syria. EU sounded like in need of laborers. And this allowed them to be, and also information channels were a very important factors for those people to move. And then, and this happened. I wouldn't say that the people who remained back who stayed back in the camps in Jordan have a good time there. Their life is very difficult, and they are in a way like they are imprisoned. And I'm sure that the more, judging by the people who go through Greece, Syrians who go through Greece, they are in a very good economic position, many of them, or they probably sold some of their property in order to get money to move. But they seem to have to be people that they enjoy a standard of living, or enjoy the standard of living in their countries, because the outfit, the money that they use, they spend, is not like the people who live outside in the streets. The people who live in hotels, people who spend money, of course, try to avoid the people who exploit them. And there are people who are, I would say, lower middle class people who try to move further. So these are the people who probably felt this insecurity in their countries, also in Turkey.
Do you mind if I add something
yes.
to that? Less than 10% of the refugees in Turkey are in the camps, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the ones who are coming across to Greece are coming directly from Syria, right? Because there are more than 90% that are living outside the camps, right? But they don't have certain protections. Turkey has been changing its protection regime, but they haven't been able to get work permits, etc. And as Ostros was saying, there was, Syria had a large middle class, actually. And so if you think about the fact that after 2000, also the numbers of refugees in Turkey grew significantly after ISIS took over. So it was not in 2013, you didn't have 2.5 million refugees in Turkey. That's a fairly recent thing. There was huge growth in the number. And so there seems to also have been a kind of domino effect, as you were saying, in the sense that you have a push, you have more refugees coming into Turkey, large numbers of refugees who are already middle class, educated with higher expectations, and they, you know, and they're all competing for basically irregular labor because they can't get work permits. So
yes, I agree with the. So Germany's the Germany's role has been, I think, instrumental in. Triggering off processes within the countries, processes from Turkey to Europe, but also trying to sustain the flow. This was not made possible in the process, because all countries realized that they could end up with a large number of people stuck in their countries. So they closed the border, and. This also shows that what is called the European principle is not working that well with the migration issue. It doesn't go further than just paying a lip service to the need for allowing people to move further and for protection, for humanitarian protection. And this goes down to humanitarian. NGOs which deal with human rights in Greece are very active to speak about Greece.
Think about the international ones.
The international ones, they are very active.
How do they cope with this kind of national animosity, uncertainty, existential crisis somehow that's fuels into politics?
Because
are they given resources, for example, to manage the crisis?
Some of them don't have their own, try to collect their own resources. They just work independently from the state. And what they've done in Lesbos, for example, is very important. But a lot of non-Greek NGOs are placed in Greek border areas. And they try to help or to initiate their own strategies to help people who try to cross the border. But I think it's not easy. There is no coordination. In my opinion, there is no coordination what is going on in the border. Who is in charge? Probably the public authorities are kind of charge of the situation. But in most of the cases, I think. International organizations like Doctors Without Frontiers are helping a lot. They are in place, and this is only an example. And they try to. They are in charge of certain operations, and I'm not sure that the Greek state can, like the other states, can manage, because it's not easy, and because bureaucratic procedures are. Complex, and very easily there are problems with the application of these bureaucratic procedures. And to say also that police force is not trained to protect people, they are more trained in the past, at least, to keep them away. There were many incidents that people were drowned because the marine patrol pushed them further to the Turkish border. So it's not an easy situation, and I'm sure that they do their best, but there are issues of coordinating efforts there, and it couldn't be otherwise, I think.
I think we have time for a couple of more questions.
Just quickly, on just what you just mentioned, sorry, did you point at me or did you point at somebody else?
Yeah, I pointed.
That's okay. You were mentioning the Marine Patrols pushing people away and police forces and border organisations being better trained as sort of, essentially pushing people away than they are saving them. But was that because people were trying to run away from them, or because the Marine Patrol itself said, go away?
I just said that to explain that in the past, Marine Patrol had the instructions not to let people to cross the marine border.
Right.
So they, in some cases, in many cases, one can choose the expression, the right expression, they did what many marine patrols did, even the Italian ones, tried to push the boats towards the Turkish sea border in order to avoid people, to avoid that refugees or migrants land into the island and then being treated according to the regulations. So it's not an easy thing, but even last week, I think, there was a group of volunteers who were charged by the Greek police because they tried to bring, they used their own boat, and tried to take a boat which was in the middle of the border between Greece and Turkey, tried to drag the boat of refugees inside the Greek national waters. And they were charged by the Greek police because, like, they tried to take people inside Greece and being treated. So this is a very delicate issue, and that's why I said that the nation states do not want to hand over the control over their border to international agencies, to Frontex, and so on. Although Frontex plays a very important role by the Greek border, by the Italian border, especially by the Greek border, they play a very important role. Although there are recent accounts, there is a reference also here by Apostolis Fotiadis, who is a journalist, a Greek journalist, who just published a book some months ago. There is a reference here on the architecture of EU border surveillance in Greece, saying that a lot of operations carried out by Frontex is carried out by Frontex, but the Frontex does not have necessarily the responsibility for them, for those operations. The Greek forces have the responsibility. So it's not, and it's a tricky issue, and it's not easy to be addressed.
Okay, I think so. Two more hands. So let's take both the questions, one here and then one here.
I was wondering how much different has been the official response to Greece with the new government compared to the government before, and also whether there have been any significant consequences.
Mention the first part of your question. I didn't hear because of the noise.
How much different has been the official stance of the Greek government?
Okay.
The new government.
The new government compared to the previous one. Yeah.
And then the
first
one. Mine was actually a more common question to what he said about pushing backs. From what I know, actually, it's not a tricky question. It's just that it's illegal to push back people without knowing whether they're migrants or they're asylum seekers. I mean, before pushing, if they have already crossed the Greek borders between Turkey and Greece, they have the right to ask asylum, and so they have the right to go to, I don't know, the police and ask asylum there, or
for yes. I agree that it is illegal, but it's not easy with the militaries to check whether they are illegal or not. So it's not easy question to address. I said, certainly if they cross the border, they are entitled to procedures. But in most of the cases, I know that it was not the issue, like that, not anymore, I think. In less cases, this happens.
This is not happening anymore.
Now, I think. The Greek, the current Greek government, today's government, tries to. It was taken by surprise to, and it is not an easy thing to coordinate efforts to meet the demand of the of those for this huge humanitarian crisis. But on the other hand, I think they had also problems. They faced the issue on the humanitarian ground, at least rhetorically, but there was a delay in doing the proper, we saw that in summer, they delayed in doing the proper actions, take the proper actions in order to protect these people and create the necessary installations to receive them and so on. So I think it's a very challenging issue, the treatment of migrants or refugees, and this process is not easy to be accomplished within a short period of time. It's a very... I know many people who work with the authorities who screen, who do the screening process. Mm-hmm. It takes... that means that people have applied for asylum, okay? But the large majority, they don't apply in Greece. They don't file an application in Greece. They just move within the Greek territory to the border to go to the next state, to another state.
Because that's also something to do with the readmission agreements. See, you know, you are supposed to be sent back to the first point of application.
Yes, but everything is screened. I think they've got, in many cases, they've got their fingerprints, they've got all the evidence that the specific people cross the border. But on the other hand, Dublin Agreement is not has been suspended in the case of Greece. They will not be sent back to Greece to ask for asylum there. So there are a lot of issues, but the state, the country, faces a real problem to make sure that these people will be treated according to what is prescribed.
Is there any difference? Because I know the public speech has become different since Syriza came into power. So, for example, now they don't talk about anymore about the public health bomb, as they used to describe.
The rhetoric has changed a lot. I agree with you. The rhetoric has changed a lot, and they are probably more in favor of the refugees, migrants, compared to the previous government, who was openly against the flows, and they believe that the flows are a problem by itself. They try to address the issues, but there are. The Greek bureaucracy is not organized to meet the challenges, I'm afraid.
So there hasn't been a better treatment of the refugees?
More time is needed, I think. The humanitarian problems, I mean, many cases in the past was that they refugees... were treated in a way that was not proper. Now I think there are attempts to improve the treatment of refugees.
Well, we are exactly on time.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to make a couple of announcements before we wind up, because we have two events next week. One is on Tuesday, and it's our usual seminar, and it's being given next week by Thalia Magiolo, who's a visiting fellow in the Hellenic Observatory, and she'll be talking about young Greeks and democracy, social representations and imaginaries, and the impact of the crisis. And on Thursday next week... you're doing it next week, yes. Okay, sorry, I suddenly panicked. No, it's not next week. Yes, next week, yeah. Thursday and next week, the 28th. We'll have Professor Luca Katseli, who's the chair of the National Bank of Greece and the Hellenic Banking Association, and also a professor at the University of Athens, who will be talking. He'll be giving a public lecture on lessons from the crisis. And do people need to sign up for that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so if you want to attend that, you'll need to sign up through LSE events. And I hope you'll join me in thanking our speaker.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.